Ja, velkommen til Radio Shalom på 87,6 MHz. Vi har i dag i studiet Arun Dundel og Albert Rapp. Arun kommer til at interviewe Albert Rapp om hans liv, og udsendelsen er på engelsk. Ja, og så er det mig, der er på teknikken og deltager i samtalen med de to gæster, jeg har i studiet. Så velkommen til vores gæste i studio. Det er mig, Shai Gabay, og vi går i gang med det samme. Okay, so Arun, you are going to interview Albert Rapp, our guest in the studio today. And what I would like to hear a little bit about you, so the listeners can know who you are. And later on, we of course introduce our guest.
Okay, well, we're here today, and it's the day before a very special day. We'll come back to that in a moment. And it's going to be a talk about a long journey and many paths. We have with us Albert Rapp. My name is Arun Dundale, with roots in several different places. I grew up in New York. My parents were from India, and now I'm a grandparent in Denmark. I did a little biochemistry, and now we're trying to make the world a little bit better by making extremely low-cost housing out of biomaterials. But that's a different journey for another day. Albert was born in Poland on November 7th, which is tomorrow, which is the special day we talked about. Albert, what year were you born in?
I was born in a town called Koomija, which was a provincial town, not very little, something like 40,000 people. And my family lived there. My mother was born there, as far as I know, and my father was born there too, but they got education outside of this town, at least my father, who went to university in Frankfurt, because it was very difficult to study medicine in Poland at that time, being a Jew. So he had to go abroad to become a doctor, but they came back to his town, which was a provincial town of 40,000 people. It's called Koomija.
What is the meaning of Koomija?
Koomija means really washing wheels, because there was quite a biggish river that just at this place ran very low, and people could pass the river. So that's why this river really was created there, because people wanted to stop and make a pause after passing the river that was not very little, but at this place was passable.
You have some roots in your mother's family that you know about. Your mother's father was working with the railways.
He was actually a engineer of railways, so he was leader of quite a bigger group of people keeping up the building the railways and keeping them running. I mean, mainly when it comes to the tracks, not so much to the locomotives. And he was a chief, and he was a known and very respected person.
Your parents' families were more cultivated or more educated than other Jews in the town. What did that mean in terms of language and learning Polish?
Well, if you wanted to make some career in Poland at that time, you couldn't speak Yiddish because it was, well, not to other people. You could speak Yiddish with other Jews and not necessarily all of them. My mother didn't speak Yiddish because it was a language of shoemakers and other artisans, but not of intelligentsia that usually had to finish the Polish gymnasium, and then they tried also to study at university, which was often not possible in Poland. But Poland earlier was divided between three different countries. Poland didn't exist for quite some time. And we were part that belonged to Austria, and this was the most appreciated and most liked because they were most tolerant. So people loved to stay in Austrian part of the Poland. And after the Second World War, my mom's aunt finished actually in Vienna, and her other aunt finished in London. So that's why people looked for a better future than the Polish future, where the anti-Semitism was much more a part of the culture.
But you didn't start out with a particular religion. You started out with another religion. What was that, and why was that so?
Well, people who saved our lives during the war, hiding us and risking their lives, they, after the war, when we were parting, they said that they saved my life, so I would like to save my soul, and my mother agreed, and I got baptized as a Catholic, and they stay Catholic. My mother let me stay Catholic and used what she could. We had to move countries because borders of the countries were changing, and the part where we lived became Soviet Union, and we moved to a part that was Prussian and became Polish. So it was all big movement of nations and big movement of religions. And my mother let me grow up as a Catholic until it happened when I was 11, 12, that some parents of the kids that also made the same move the countries recognized me on the street, and they obviously told the children too that I was a Jew, because they started calling me a Jew on the street. And then I found that apart from that I was believing Catholic, then for them I was just a Jew.
Yeah, but there was a very definite point where you stopped being a believing Catholic.
Oh yes, it was the communion is when you really get introduced as a grown up into the Catholic religion, when you first go and tell a priest about all the wrong things you have done in your life. They call it,
sins.
All the sins. And then the priest would forgive you the sins, making a price that you have to repeat some prayer several times every morning or every evening. And I did it, but I didn't feel anything, and that's why I lost my religion and started just stopping doing it, because I didn't feel Christ coming in my heart as they promised.
Your parents, excuse me, I'm breaking in, but your parents, they didn't see themselves as Jews, or they were identified with Judaism? Or?
Oh, yes. Well, okay. Not all Jews identified with Judaism, because my mother came from a family that saw themselves as a very modern, because they saw Judaism being a nation, and has nothing to do with religion, which doesn't mean that they are supposed to change religions, but you didn't need to pray or do something particular. You just knew that you were a Jew, like a Pole knows that he is a Pole.
So they went to the synagogue maybe only in occasions of special occasions.
The synagogue, we ended up in not a big town, on a province in Lower Schlesia that Poland took over from Germany, and there were some there were quite a bit of Jews at that time who escaped from Russia and ended up in what was called Poland later. And they, some of them were religious, but many were not religious. I think that you've been through so many experiences running from fascists and hiding that you are a Jew, that you started doubting a bit in the positive side of declaring yourself a Jew, and many people tried to hide it. And it was even in the small town where we lived, it was about 15,000 people, there were quite a bit of Jews, and there was even a Jewish, not communion, but cooperative, because they were mainly shoemakers and
tailors.
But it existed for some time until people decided that they that anti-Semitism continues in Poland, and many started leaving to Israel.
So you were talking about the Jews that came from Russia. I've tried to find some music. I asked you about this because we used to have some kind of music breaks in our programs.
Right.
I didn't really know what should I find, but what should I look for?
Ask me. But Katyusha.
Yeah, that's exactly what I found, actually, Albert.
This was the most popular.
I thought that it was very popular on the time, so let's listen to it.
I can even name it.
Песню заводила про степного сизого орла, про того, которого любила, про того, чьи письма берегла.
Okay, so we're back.
And let's return to the town of Washing Wheels, Kołomeia.
Right.
There were three different kinds of cultures or peoples there.
Yes.
In town and around town.
But they just lived in different quarters of town, but they actually were used for different Jews. Poles were the high intelligentsia. They would be lawyers and so on. Jews would be the lower intelligentsia. They would be doctors and other things that were practical to work but not to rule. And then there were ordinary Ukrainians. They will mainly be cleaners and helpers. And there were some Poles that they felt above it all because it was Poland. Mm-hmm. It was Poland. It was not Poland before the war, because at that time I think it was occupied by Russians. But after the war, the geography changed, borders changed, and some of the and countries changed. For example, the Poland took quite a big bit of Germany, where we moved in, because the Germany was all Germans were kicked out and had to go what remained of Germany, while the Schlesia, Upper Schlesia, Lower Schlesia, it was quite industrious. It became Polish, and it means that everybody who was a Polish citizen could just come to this small town and find an empty flat.
How was it going to school?
Our schools, they started making, I think that they made also a Jewish school, but my mother didn't teach my mother didn't know Yiddish, because Yiddish in the class where my mother was born, which was intelligentsia, was looked like the language of the proletar,
of the common,
of the workers and hand workers. But if you wanted to become something in a Jewish society, you went to university. So my father finished university in Germany and was a doctor, and my mother married him, and they lived together. He had his own practice because he spoke both Polish and Yiddish.
What subjects did you have at school, or rather, how was it for you at school? Was it a struggle? Was it very good for you?
Well, they actually had to state quite early that I was very intelligent. So the problem was that when I arrived to the third or fourth class at school, Polish school, basic school, it happened that I knew more than the teacher, because they just, teachers who had the, how do you call studenter exam? It will be much
maturity, high school diploma. High school diploma, you could say.
High school diploma. And even them, it was all done very quickly because they were missing teachers. So teachers represented very low level.
How did you get your knowledge?
I started reading very early.
And there were certain kinds of books you liked to read?
I remember now, when you remind me, that I was reading popular culture books. And I was mainly at that time interested in animals. So I was reading quite a lot about animals, and maybe a bit of travel because of Robinson Crusoe. So I was also paying at school, because up to the third, fourth grade, I knew in many fields and not everything, and they taught me to shut up, even though I was not very good at it. I could stick my finger, but they will just let it wait, finger, because
I had to... Did you have a passion for science when you were reading books, borrowing books?
I started reading popular science books very early, and I read quite a lot of it, at least as much as literature. So that's why I was a difficult pupil, because I knew too much. Of course, it started becoming a bit difficult when you arrive to the gymnasium, where there are some things that I never read, and I was used to that I knew almost everything, so I will just look through these books very superficially. So then they started proving that I don't know everything.
There was one subject that you weren't very good at and you weren't very happy about it.
I don't remember very
sports.
Much. I was absolutely lousy at sports. So I was always, they laughed at me because I simply couldn't kick the ball. It was because on the street where we lived in the beginning, it was a street because my mother was alone, so she couldn't get any good flat. We came from Ukraine to the Schlesien, and Germans were kicked out. So you just had to go out into an empty town and find yourself a place where you could live in this empty town. So this was just that if there were marriages, the woman could look after the kids and men would go and find even a villa. Mm-hmm. My mother found only 1.5 room on the first floor in the toilet out in the garden because she was alone with the kid. So she had a very poor start.
Your father had passed from typhus?
My father passed of typhus. Fortunately, it's ironic, that much better death than in Auschwitz, where he had to see his patients because he was a doctor, and he got typhus, and he died of that.
Back in school, would you come early to class sometimes and help the other students?
Right now, I don't remember, but I think I did. But generally, because we lived close to the center of town, that many kids I could just see because I was friends with some of the kids, so they could share it and they can get it. But if somebody needed to make a copy at school, I would come a few minutes sooner because it made me popular and I needed it very much because I was lousy at sports.
So you had to
compensate.
You had subjects like Latin and mythology?
Oh, this was much later.
This was later.
Latin started, I think, probably in fifth or sixth class, if at all. I don't remember that. It was sure in gymnasium. And it was seven classes of elementary school, and then you started eight class that was kind of introduction, and then you started to be a real gymnasium.
Yeah,
and this was, of course, nothing that was doubt of that I was supposed to do that, because my family was intelligentsia before the war.
In addition to schooling, you were also active in the outdoors.
Oh, since I was very little, I liked travel. It was just some that sat in my nature. So from the window where we lived on a hill in a house, we could see a beginning of the whole chain of hills that much further on changed into the mountains. Mm-hmm. It was just the ending of the chain of the hills. And the nearest, the closest mountain was something like 5 kilometers away, and we had to pass two villages, so it was not something wild to be afraid of. So with my best friend, Richard Trembetsky is a Polish surname, we went for a trip to the top of this mountain, and this was my first success, and I continued for many years becoming a Boy Scout of Polish scouts.
So you liked the nature. Yeah.
I liked the nature, and they had a lot of this kind of a program. So I actually became a leader there was also an instructor which was grown up.
Okay, yeah.
But I was the original head of the scouts.
Group,
first at highest up to the seventh class was the elementary school, and then came gymnasium, and I continued to be a head, a leader of scouts.
What kind of skills did you learn and teach in the scouts?
What
kind of skills? Chopping wood,
simple,
compass,
putting tent, or making a, how you call it when it's made of tree. Of green.
Or surviving in nature, doing...
building a place out of leaf grains so you could sleep
shelter.
There.
A shelter.
Well, I was very good on building shelters because you couldn't buy tents at that time. It was just after the war. And some things were found at schools that were left by Germans because Germans had to leave this part. This part of Poland is still Polish, but it has a German history. Borders had changed, and Poland took some of the East German places.
So, Albert, I have another song from the Red Army for you, which is called Polyushka Polei, I think so, I'm not sure.
Polyushka Polei.
Let's try to listen to it, okay?
Okay. Polyushka means my little piece of ground.
Okay.
It was, if a peasant was poor, then he had a pole.
Okay,
but if it was richer, then pole was the part of it that was left wild where oxes had to eat grass.
Okay, so let's listen to it.
All right.
But your last name is Rapp, R-A-P-P. What kind of a name is that, or what background does it have?
Well, as far as I know, it was just name of my father's family. My mother's family name was Elberg, and its family existed and continued, while Rapps almost disappeared, at least the Rapps I belonged to, so I had very little contact with them. And I think also I met somebody, but he didn't look very interested, so I had much closer relationship to my family where more people survived, like Tante Clara. She lived in Vienna, and they, because she got, we lived in Galicia, if you know what it is. Mm-hmm. Galicia was a part between Poland and Austria and Ukraine and Russia. It was quite a big, the big town that you still hear today is Lviv.
Lviv, yeah.
And this is a big town that was a center of this big province. So it still exists, but who lives there now, I don't know, because many people who live there, Poles moved to Poland when it became, what started becoming a Soviet Union, and Ukrainians, some moved probably down into the countryside if they have, because if it comes to agriculture, there were quite a few peasants, while normally if Poles lived there, they were, I don't know the expression for it, but they were honorable people, people of honor, and they were a higher class, and they had bigger parts of the country, but it was all taken from them when the Soviet Union came.
Okay, your dad passed away, and your mother and you lived in a one-room apartment with the facilities in the backyard, but that changed at some point because...
Yes, this was actually already in Schlesia. It was after we moved what became Poland, because this part of Poland where I was born became Soviet Union, and everybody who didn't want to be a citizen in Soviet Union had to move to new borders of Poland, and Poland took quite a big part of eastern part of Germany, where it became a western part of Poland. And this is still today like that.
It's but she moved from a one-room apartment to a bigger apartment on top of a pharmacy.
Oh, it was a bit later.
Yeah.
We came in the goods wagons, and we were very poor. And when we stopped on the station that was empty, everything was emptied from Germans because they got kicked out. Some people get out and started looking for a place to live. And two women with whom she made friends in the luggage wagon, which we used coming from Ukraine to Schlesia, they were married, so they could look after the kids, and the husbands could go and find, one found a villa, another found in a flat in a villa. And my mother found a room on the first floor with the toilet in the garden. And this is where she started her career as a lone woman.
But it changed when she got married again.
She got married after some time. Yeah. It took time. He even moved to, this is a funny for me story, because my mother found, she was started teaching in a Jewish school. This was her first career, because there are many Jews that stayed at the beginning of moving to Poland. There were quite a many Jews in this small town, which German name, because Polish won't say you anything, was Frankenstein. Later it was called Ząbkowice. And there were so many Jews that my mother could become a teacher in this school, because she spoke German, she came from educated family, and she had maturity exam, which was unusual, so she could immediately become a teacher in this school, and she stayed there for quite some time until she met her future husband. He was also Jewish, and she was a very energetic woman, so when she started living with him, she figured out that he had unfinished studies of pharmaceutics. So she sent him to university, and she was sending him money, where he finished the university in pharmacia. Mm. And then he started working as a pharmacist, and because the Germans who owned these shops, these pharmacies, were kicked out, so not very, I don't remember how many months or years, but we could move into the pharmacy and take over flat of the pharmacy owner, which was like that the pharmacy was at the bottom, open to the central place, and then it was his private floors.
Yes.
And so we had a three floors flat, which was of course
unnecessary
for us. So my mother found a job as a teacher, and she found a cleaner who could also live on the top floor. So we quite quickly arranged ourselves quite well, because my mother grew up in intelligentsia family,
yeah,
where her father was a doctor, and it was quite of an ambition to get education and become something else, not just a worker, or not even just a head of the group of workers. You were supposed to be specialist in something.
Mm.
So it was given that I will be a doctor since I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
Sounds very Jewish.
Well, we are 100% Jewish.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, how old were you when you started to study medicine then? And where did you study medicine?
The nearest main town that was ahead of the bigger... Poland was divided in 16 or 17 quite big
provinces or counties.
Provinces, counties. And we lived in one of them, and there was an old university, and it was quite a known town that before the war was known as Breslau. And people who lived in those areas knew that Breslau was an important town over the big part of what was Germany then, because it was what in Germany was called Schlesia, as far as I know, and in Polish is Śląsk, and it was even a lower Schlesia and upper Schlesia. And upper Schlesia were many cool mines, while the lower Schlesia was rather industrial and agriculture.
So the medicine school was...
No, the medical school was in Breslau, which was the head of this province. Poland was divided after the war in something like 16 or 17 provinces, all of them quite good, quite big, with own university.
Starting medicine, did you have ideas of which kind of medicine you would like to learn about?
This is why I say Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ, we can all say that.
I just needed to be a doctor because this was expected, and I didn't have any idea what I really wanted to do. But because I had good grades when studying, so I could stay as a practicant at university. And then I found that if you wanted to make career working at the university, that you had to write articles that would be printed in doctor's magazine. There was something that existed, came once a month, and it was doctor's magazine for the our country and our countryside. And there was also something central. And when I started working there, I started in pediatrics, and I found that if I wanted to advance, I had to write articles that would be printed in medical magazines. And I wrote this article, and it got printed in magazine, and I looked at it and said to myself, never before. My school and secondary school and even studies went so easy for me that I found that all of a sudden I have to work very hard reading several articles from different branches and putting it all together. And I decided that I will not do that because I was just too lazy. I got lazy because it was easy for me to get into the school very often because I read a lot of popular science. I knew more than teachers that got very little education.
Albert, you said Jesus Christ. I would like to play another piece of music.
All right.
This time by a Polish composer. If I say the name, it's called Preissner. I guess most people know him. And the piece of music...
I don't remember him.
No, I don't think you know, but the piece is called Lacrimosa. Let's listen to that.
Lacrimosa.
Lacrimosa.
Do you know what it means?
I think it means tearful...
Tearful,
and,
crying.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
if you want.
Now we are back to Albert and...
And Cajun. We were in medical school looking at pediatrics and writing an article. What was the social life like at medical school?
At medical school, it was a bit... I was a bit... I knew few people, and I lived... When we went to study to bigger town, because I lived in a provincial town, 12,000 people. University was in a big town, Breslau, which was a million. So then I just, my mother and my stepfather, they found, what did I want to say? They found the local school, because in Poland is very big division. Basic school is to 7th class, and all children go there. Then if you are clever enough, then you go to gymnasium, which is 4 years, or you go to a technical school instead and learn some profession. And then you go to the medical studies, which was very difficult to get place, and you had to know the right people, which we fortunately do. Apart from you have to good grades, because it's a difficult subject. And then you continue studying medicine. And after 6 years, I finished like a doctor. And then again, you get a practice where you get a job just for 1 year and maybe 1 year more, where they know that you are only for the time being, because you are just finishing your doctor's education. And only then you are fully educated doctor after these studies and two years of practice in a big hospital where you can teach you something. And then you can choose what career you want to do.
Did you start working in pediatrics, or did something else happen with a change of horizons?
I started pediatrics, and I just found that it didn't interest me, that it was just not for me. I couldn't talk to the patients. I could talk to the parents. And you had to have a particular approach to the children, so they felt quiet,
comfortable,
and
yeah,
positive. And I never learned that, because I was a single child and my mother was dictatorial. My mother was a very difficult person. She was very energetic, and he saved our lives, but she was very dictatorial. He met her new husband, because my father died in the beginning of the war. And so when she found that he had not finished pharmaceutic studies, she sent him to study the rest of pharmacy, and she was working hard on giving him the money to survive it. On the other hand, when he came back to our provincial town, there was actually one of the pharmacies got emptied because Germans were being kicked out, because when we occupied Schlesia, not all the civil Germans still stayed there, and only gradually they realized that Germany is not Germany anymore here. It was just Eastern Germany, and Schlesia became Polish, and they couldn't cope with it, so they started moving to the new Germany. And there were empty shops and empty pharmacy.
Yeah, which your family took over.
Yeah,
one of them.
And we took over one of two pharmacies in a town of 8,000-10,000 people, and it was on a central place with windows straight to the Rathaus, or how would you call
Rollhus.
It?
Town hall.
Yeah. Town hall, and very central, just three floors, just building. Belonging to pharmacy. Nobody else could take it because then they could go and get medicine. So he was the only maybe with one, because the pharmacy was, there were only two pharmacies in the whole town. So it was a big, nice pharmacy. So he just needed some people to work there. But he was running the pharmacy. And parallelly, he finished his studies. And could stay as the chief of this pharmacy until we had to leave Poland.
Your mother, being dictatorial, must have meant she was quite disciplined as well. She was quite disciplined. She really could focus on getting her husband through pharmacy school, helping you get through medical school.
True.
What happened after you were done at medical school and your mom, or I don't know how it happened, under the time of Gomulka?
As far as I know, she helped me also, because for the first 2 years you had a work as a trainer.
Residency. Residency?
It's like a trainee, but it's
a training.
Yeah.
So it was called a training. You worked in this hospital and you had a full job, but you had somebody over him just controlling it.
Yep.
And he got this job and then he took over because the chief, I think he was a German and had to go. He took over the pharmacy and he took over the flat in three floors because it was on the central square on the Rathaus. Do you know what it means?
Town hall.
It's a town hall square and with the windows straight to the town hall. Yeah. So he's become much more known and respected. There was one more pharmacy that also was a pharmacist, but she was just a woman and she didn't have the same respect.
Mm-hmm. What happened after you were done at medical school and you had an opportunity to leave Poland? Or what brought about leaving Poland?
Well, they started looking for the Jews and after the Jews, and people started getting kicked out of good positions because many Jews, well, Poles stay in Poland during the Second World War. Jews, many of them ran away and, for example, ended up in Russia where they could still finish their studies, or came to Poland where have finished studies and they were easily accepted to university to finish these studies. And my stepfather my mother was working and he has to finish pharmacy and she was supporting him until finished, and then he came to our provincial town and there was still somebody unqualified because it was a German land and all Germans got kicked out.
But Albert, I get into the sentence, but what I was wondering, this anti-Semitism is started again.
Anti-Semitism. Yes.
Prosecuting the Jews or making life hard for them started again after the war.
Many Jews stayed. There was even in our town, that was a provincial town, there was enough Jews who were tailors.
Yeah.
There was a Jew. There was a tailor. There are many of them, and there was some cooperation.
A guild, a league.
No, it was not on this level. They just had a very big building where they were sitting 10
Like factories, like factories.
But manufacturers.
Yeah, manufacturer. Okay.
It was manufacture.
Yeah.
It was manufacture, and it was quite a big and nice manufacture.
But you were talking about the hatred that started.
Well, it was at the beginning. It was not very organized. People still remembered that they didn't like the Jews, but they were when there were no more, there were no other pharmacists, and there was no other tailor. Then
they were dependent on them.
So they were depending on them. But slowly, with years, it started emptying and or being taken over.
And
but
that was one of the reasons that you left Poland.
Yes. Okay. Well, actually, I left Poland because I just felt that I will never be complete. They will never be forgotten that I am a Jew.
Okay.
And I wanted some country where being Jewish is not something you point your fingers, and even if you have respect him because he's a doctor, but he is only a Jew.
Okay.
So I didn't like this atmosphere, and I could feel it coming again because Poles were still Poles, and I think that even started getting Jews started even more annoying, because when the Hitler started moving around, many of them escaped to Ukraine, to Russia, so they quite many died. But particularly people who could do something could move, because Russians need tailors, to sew the to uniforms for the army. So it was a very mixed situation. That on the one way you were still a dirty Jew, on the other hand they needed you, so they will be nice to you, but you never knew. You hardly ever trust them 100%. Some people we trusted, we got saved during the war by people who just took us into the... they had a big, how do you call it, agricultural... They were not honorable, they were not on this level, but they were just richer people who had a big... quite a big landbow, would you say that?
Farming areas.
A big farm. The farm had a house that looked like a villa. So it was really, it was not just a big farmer house.
Very well off.
It was a villa in the middle of the fields in three floors.
You have several lovely expressions you use to color or to shape your thoughts. One of them is Jesus Christ, and another one is a word or a sound that's buh. Where does that come from, and how did it happen that you acquired that word in your language?
I was speaking fluent Polish. I didn't see a word in Yiddish, because Yiddish was for proletariate. Intelligentsia spoke Polish, and Polish Jew, if you wanted to be really intelligentsia, had to speak the Polish better than most Poles, because nobody could ever say this Jew can't speak Polish. So they need to know that my Polish is better than your Polish.
Than your Polish,
What about the buh?
This is from Italy.
Yeah, and how is it that you ended up speaking Italian?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And buh.
We had to leave Poland. We had to leave Poland. And we had many of the Jews living in Poland went directly to the States or Australia or something.
As refugees.
Israel.
We had Tante Clara. Tante Clara was one of the sisters of my grandmother, and they were three or four, and these girls, before the war, they were supposed, when they got some, I think they got a gymnasium, and then they had to be a bit more international. So Tante Clara went to Vienna, and the other Tante went to England. That's why I have a family in England.
Okay.
So they just tried to find a career somewhere where they could achieve something, not being pointed out as Jews.
Mm-hmm. But so your mom and you went to Italy then. Was it your mom and you went to Italy? Was it Rome that you...
We went, I just tried to remember. We lived on the provincial suburb in Rome, and then we moved to Rome because we just wanted to be in town. It was also closer to Hyas. It's written H-I-A-S. Hyas was very important proper office organized by the Jews from the world to help Jews running from their countries.
So how old were you when you came to Italy? How old were you when you came to Italy?
I was something like 26.
26, okay.
Because I got my practice, because after in Poland, after you finish your studies, you have to have at least 2 years of practice in a hospital that they found for you, where you got your practical practice. Then you finally got a full diploma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in Italy, did you begin to practice medicine, or were you learning the language and learning about the country?
This is funny because I think that they had a clinic, and I even started coming to this clinic, but it wasn't very useful. I had to do practice in Italy to become able to work in Italy. So I was in some departments just as a doctor pupil. And I stayed there for something like a year or two, I don't remember. And then I've become a doctor for the Jewish community, because finally they had a Jew who was a doctor.
Italian Jews or Polish Jews or many different?
I learned Italian, so that's why I speak both with Italians and with Poles, and this is why they took me, because it showed that I had easiness of learning languages, and it comes probably from my little childhood, when I've learned to speak Polish and Russian. So they say that if a child learns two languages, then it's easy to learn some other languages. Mm. And I speak five without studying, and it seems that I speak quite decent English and acceptable Dansk.
Do it, Eilie. How long were you in Italy, and how did you make the transition to Denmark?
Good question. It was just that people started having to leave, and I didn't want to go to some of the countries where they were generally going. And then I found that all of a sudden that was become popular, because everybody was going, where are you going, where are you going? And Sweden started it earlier and started accepting Polish Jews to Sweden. And it, for some reason, for God's sake, yes, I think it was because I didn't want to go to northern Sweden. Uh-huh. I didn't want to live with the ice. Okay. So I gave it some time, seeing what happens, and Denmark opened the borders. because Sweden was doing it, so Denmark opened the borders, and it was quite easy for me to get to the Sweden, and even being able to take my mother and my stepfather. And he actually got a place, he was a pharmacist, and he got a job at pharmacy.
Mm-hmm. You came to Denmark and stayed on a ship in the beginning?
Yes, we did. Right now I don't remember it, but it was first on the ship that was lying just next to police stations, to very close to the center, and we stayed there for some time, and they started finding flats. And my first flat, because I was quite so I started looking around, and I got a flat only for myself on the second floor, Istegade 114.
Okay.
I was very proud of myself. This was the first half of Istegade were prostitutes, and the second half was respectable. So I found a flat in a respectable place, and because of all the press that was about these incomers, these refugees, and Denmark had a tradition of hiding the Jews during the Second World War, so I got job very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And you had to get a job where you only needed three sentences in Danish.
Yes, so you remind me, because
in the only area of medicine where you didn't need much language was anesthesia.
Yes. So, hvad hedder de, var deres fødselsdag, og har de spist eller drukket noget i dag?
That's all.
No, it's not all. Nu kommer der et stik. And what is very good, that it showed that I was very good on on sticking. I had a facility of hitting the vein, because you don't just put intramuscular injection. You have the injection that has to come around in the body and make you sleep.
Has to go into a vein or...
Yes.
So you started working in anesthesia. What hospital were you at then?
I think it was first...
Was it Lolland-Falster?
No. It was all in Copenhagen.
Ah.
It was all in Copenhagen. And I started in a smaller hospital that today is gymnasium. It was in Ząbkowice-Śląskie. That I can write it for you. Frankenstein was it called in German.
Okay. So, but here in Denmark, which hospital you started working at?
I started in a hospital that was in something that becomes school later.
Okay. But was it on Amager or was it in Gentofte?
No, it was very close to center of town.
Kommunhospital
at that time
didn't exist.
It was actually something that is a school today, and it was Ulica, I think Jagiellońska, it was one of the main streets ending in the Central Park, and it was just as cross street before, so it was a very central location, very good place, and I didn't need to go far, because I had to go just from the, it was on the hill, so I just get to the bottom of the hill, and we found a little flat there with my father and my stepfather. And
are we back in Poland now, Alberto? Where are we? We are back in Poland.
We're back in Poland.
But when you came to Copenhagen, you stayed on a ship, then you found a flat in Istegade, in the good part of Istegade. What year are we talking about here? 60 something?
68, I think.
68, the end of the 60s. Okay, so it was the pornographic and all this. going around?
With Poles start kicking out Polish Jews.
Okay, yeah, on that time, yeah.
So for some time in Denmark, you worked with anesthesia, but then you moved away from it to a different area, and also away from the hospitals.
Yes.
How did that happen with the pain treatment?
It was still working in anesthesia. I don't think I changed the specialty, but I made it in two or three hospitals, and I think I've become even a specialist. But then I found that getting a job in Copenhagen with my qualifications, not wanting to be at the bottom, I had to move to the province, and I really hated the idea. I wanted to stay in a bigger town. And right at that moment, I discovered that was something, there was a small branch of anesthesia growing into the pain treatment. Mm-hmm. And what I did, which was, I think, quite courageous, I just went to these places where these first books came from. One came from England and one came from America. And I had, I found that I was good at learning languages. Mm-hmm. I started speaking Danish better and sooner than most others. It was because maybe I've learned that if you learn two languages as a child,
early
then you
in
have
your life,
facility
yeah.
of learning yeah. languages. Yeah. And I learned Polish and Russian when we still been in Galicia.
Yeah.
So but how did you? You had a book about pain treatment from England, and a book about pain treatment from America.
I read them.
Yeah.
And I decided to go to the authors. I contacted the authors because, fortunately, my English definitely not was like it is today, but it was tolerated because it's somebody who is really trying to learn languages. So even if he's not perfect, as far as we can understand him, it's all right. Mm-hmm. So I found one specialist in England and one specialist in States, and I wrote to both of them, and I got a practice with both of them, and they actually were making courses because pain treatment was so new that many people wanted to learn from them a practical part of this, what was in the book.
How to do it.
So it was all just starting.
Hmm. And your clinic was on Vesterbro? Here in Copenhagen?
Yes, I think so.
Near the New Theater? The New Theater.
Yeah.
All
right. My memory got much poorer right very recently. So you are lucky that I still remember.
That we get you in the program.
And you remember some more. The New Theater, yes, I remember. It was not in the New Theater.
Not near
it was on the corner of Vesterbrogade and to the New Theater. So it was really a very good address because it was, when you look at this house from the front, there is a place at the place.
Yeah.
Even with a sculpture or something, very nice.
A square or something, yeah.
Square just in front of this house. So it was quite elegant place. And I started it by renting myself in with a private practitioner. And I was taking it in the afternoons when he went home. But fortunately to me, he was close to, maybe that's why he took me, because he was close to being retired. And when he retired, I kind of
automatically took over
the whole very nice big clinic. There was an entrance, and there was a waiting room, and there was actually two rooms that I could later rent to one other doctor in a private practitioner.
So you had a very successful clinic with clients from everywhere.
Yes, because there was one chief of a department who had a little clinic because he was a chief of a department, and he was doing pain treatment. So I read the books, and then I went both to England and to America to see pain treatment. So when I came back, I was quite convinced that I knew enough to have courage to open the clinic and not make an idiot of myself.
So you've had a life in Denmark with a daughter and two lovely grand boys, and at the same time you developed an affection for Italy again, and you were going there for many summers.
Yes.
What was the name of the town, and what was it like in that town or that village?
Oh, well, actually I moved to the Rome.
With Paestum and Capaccio?
You're right. Capaccio, it was a small town where I think that I started going just once a week as a doctor, and people liked me very much, and I've become a part of the Capaccio, so I felt quite comfortable.
They called you the Danish doctor in Italian? Dottore?
I don't think so.
Dottore Danese?
It may be.
Yeah.
Yes, because I came from Denmark.
Yeah.
So, well, and I had quite a good success because there was just one chief of the department who had a private clinic, but he had his time was a bit not that long, because he had to look after his department. So I was the first full-time pain treatment doctor
in Denmark.
So I was quite successful, particularly because I had a very nice central clinic. Well, I think I started in Breslau. Or did I start in Ząbkowice? Because I don't quite, right now I don't remember, because I think I started in my province town and just found that it was too little, so I moved it to how do you call it, a province, head state of the province.
Yeah.
Yes, and this province was a side of Denmark or more.
Yeah.
So the first years of your life, you were Catholic and Jesus Christ was important. You then discovered your Jewish identity and maintained it. And recently, one of your grandchildren made a declaration at school. Your oldest grandson is Albert, and the younger one was Edward. And I think it was Edward that said something at school.
He said that he's Jewish, and I was very surprised, because I never pushed it on a family. My daughter was only half Jewish, and the wrong half, because it was a father who was Jewish and not a mother.
Not the mother.
And it means a lot for the Jews, so I was a bit
surprised,
so to say. I like Jews and I didn't like them too. I like them because it was my nation, and I support if they suffer or if something happens, and I have an uncle in Israel, but I have also a cousin in England, so we were a bit made international.
Mm-hmm. You had a cousin in Stony Brook too, didn't you?
Yes.
Outside of New York?
Yes. Yeah. He was a bit more distance. I don't, without hardly have a contact. But I have my cousin lives in London. They ended up in Vienna because Poland at that time was divided between Austria, and if you were in Austria part of Poland, then Vienna was your center and your magnet. So Tante Clara finished in, they had a nice shop in a nice flat on Favoritenstrasse. Favoritenstrasse, it was definitely a Favoritenstrasse, one of the main street going out of the city and not far from the center. And they had a nice shop. I think it was with fashion and
hats. And today you've been living close to the center of Copenhagen. Where is it that your apartment is, and who do you live with?
Center of Copenhagen, I think.
Where you're apart? Where are you
today,
staying?
Today.
On Østerbro.
Yeah.
Right now you confused me.
Yeah, oh, okay. It's Sølvgade, yeah.
That you're staying on Sølvtorv. Yeah. By Kartoffel Eikene and the National Art Museum.
Yes.
And you're staying with somebody very special. Her name is Kirsten.
Kirsten, yes.
Yeah.
All right. You see, my memory starts really making, if I change subjects too often. And
if we jump from one time to another.
There's a lovely story about how you met Kirsten.
Remind me.
That you had gone to an exhibit of some art.
Mm. Oh, yes, and then I wanted to see the artist.
You liked the art, you ended up liking the artist even more.
Well, I just expected that if I see a few pictures, maybe she's some good picture. I did it more than once, that I wanted two pictures that are hanging at home. And I met her, and she wasn't hanging.
She could walk and talk.
She walked and talked, and we started meeting, and it seemed that very soon we got very close. Somehow, very nice. Finally, I touch wood, I found a woman with whom I got everything. Yeah. It was, you know, you ask and this interest. And what do you like, and what do you read, and what do you do in bed? And all that just seemed to fit both of us. And this is my first marriage that lasts, touch wood, more than 20 years. And we have not the weakest, how do you call it, perspective of doing anything else or changing it. We live well together.
Yeah, that's nice to hear.
Which is this is a big success, because I tried a few relationships before that seemed to be quite attractive, until you stay together and find that there are too many weaknesses.
At an early age, you learned to speak excellent Polish, and you did very well at school.
Yes.
And your grandchildren reflect some of the school part. Albert is going to a very special school now?
Yes, both of them.
Both of them. And why is that? Or what kind of school is it?
This is school for very intelligent children.
So
for children to deserve, go to the special school, so they don't
get bored just in the ordinary school.
They just get bored and do nothing particular. This was a bit of my problem with my schools in Poland.
So from a grandfather who attained a high status and worked as a railway engineer, to you who attained a very comfortable status as a doctor, perhaps you're passing it on from your grandfather to your grandchildren. And it'll be fascinating to see what kind of lives they have here.
Well, you see, this maybe you should not write. I'm asking you not to write it. I had a very difficult relationship with my daughter because my mother was a dictator, and she found herself a man he could use, and she dictated him and made him study pharmacy. He was just kind of a technician, not a magister.
Okay.
And she sent him to university, and she paid for him, and she worked hard, very hard. She was making sweaters, but he finished it, and then, to his And he was much weaker character, but he was not stupid. Mm-hmm. So he listened to her, and she found there was one pharmacy in our area that was missing a pharmacist. So so she sent him over. So they saw each other only. Shall I stop? Or you have
no, no, no. It's okay. I just tell Laun how much time we have left, so we lose our.
I see. So yeah. They put him to a pharmacy where she saw him only in weekends, because it was a little town, 20 kilometers away, not a big village or a little town, and he worked there until there was a free place. There were two pharmacies in the provincial town where we lived, and one of the pharmacists, I think he went to Germany, because we took this part of Schlesia from Germans, and she moved before him into the flat, because she was this kind of woman, and so he came too, and he was the head of a pharmacy, and we stayed there for a long time, and he was a respected person in this provincial town of 15,000 people, 12 or 15,000 people. And I went to the university in the nearest university, which was Wrocław, which you can maybe recognize from Breslau. And I got place. I studied there, and I got place on the clinic.
Albert, perhaps we could end on a little story of how we met. And the story is that about 14 years ago, I was going to take a plane from Berlin back to Copenhagen, and I sat down in my seat with a copy of The New Yorker. And two very noisy Danes got on, and I thought, oh, they must be from Jutland because they're speaking with accents. And they sat down next to me, so I tried to show my magazine that I spoke English. But then the gentleman next to me, in very perfect English, looked at a word on the text, and he said, Lucite. What does the word Lucite come from? I said, oh, he speaks English. So we explained it and talked about the fact that it was related to clear and lucid and transparent and Lucifer, the angel of light, etc. And I began to like this gentleman because his English was, our language was interesting, but the content of our conversation was quite good. Jesus, we flew back to Kastrup and got off, and I said, well, which way are you going? He says, well, I'm taking the metro to Fyrmarkskaya. I said, oh, so am I. And we discovered at that point that you lived on Øster Fyrmarkskaya 6 and I live at number 18. Since then, we've continued the conversations. Sometimes they're very clear, sometimes they're less clear, but they're always fun.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Anyway, thank you both for coming to the studio. We will have to stop here because our time is out.
This was a very elegant finish.
Right, Albert. Thank you very much. And happy thank birthday. You. Tomorrow is your birthday.
Yes, it is tomorrow.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. We decided that we'll make it very small.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
of